Hello, I'm Susan Spence. Welcome to the latest edition of the Borders podcast. This is the place to listen to interviews and news from the world of books, music and DVD, as well as hear about exclusive offers and competitions. In this edition, then, we head to Ambridge, the fictional village in the BBC Radio 4 drama The Archers. Angela Piper, who plays Jennifer Aldridge, has written Jennifer Aldridge's Archer's Cookbook, over 150 delicious recipes in a season-by-season tour of the kitchens of Ambridge. Well, I jumped at the chance to spend a day in the country, as you can imagine, when Angela invited me to her own kitchen to see where it all happens, and she even baked me some biscuits. It's been a while since we had Tom Hall from Lonely Planet on the podcast, so we thought it was about time we got him back into the Borders studio. Now, Tom being the expert, we always let him decide what's topical to talk about. But when he said to me, holidays by rail, I have to admit, I did have my doubts. I needn't have, though, as you'll discover shortly. But before we get started, let me remind you that you can buy all the books we feature in this podcast by visiting the Borders website, borders.co.uk. Now, imagine being given the opportunity to have a sneak peek into the private world of one of your favourite characters. Hello, I'm Susan Spence, and I'm sat in the kitchen of none other than Angela Piper, who plays the much-loved Jennifer Aldridge in the BBC Radio 4 drama The Archers. Angela, thank you so much for inviting us into your home.
Well, I'm delighted you're here, and we're sitting by the cosy aga, because outside it's pouring with rain.
I have to say, actually, I popped in here to have a chat with you about your new book. It's Jennifer Aldridge's Archer's Cookbook. And this is the perfect setting. We're in your kitchen. It's a beautiful country kitchen. We've got the aga outside. We have a wonderful big rolling garden with all the flowers and the vegetables. It's just such the perfect place to talk about a book like this.
Well, it is. And I think perhaps it's where I live that inspires me to put pen to paper and because I love cooking and to create the recipes that I've created in my book.
And the book itself is, I think, it's beautifully illustrated. It reminds me, actually, of my mum's old cookbook that she used to have. She used to jot things down in a fountain pen, little bits of paper in there. It's a hardback book. It's got about 150 recipes in there. It truly is unique because of the fact that it pulls on everything that is life in Ambridge and the Archers and all the characters involved.
Yes, that's the idea. And I just want you to feel that you're there sitting at the table with Jill, with her pot of honey, which she's just offered to you, and she's baking scones, and feel that you're there in her kitchen. I want you also to imagine that you can see Linda sort of whizzing down the hill on her bicycle, and she's stopping to collect some little flower from the hedgerows to sort of enliven her salad, and or, you know, jogging along in the cart behind Joe's Bartleby, clipping and clopping along the country lanes. And this is what I want you to feel in my book, that Jennifer is there asking everybody in the village, please, have you got a recipe that I would like to put in my book? And I've got a scrapbook, and I'm opening it on the table, and I'm starting to stick in the recipes. And I actually think Rory's helping Jennifer do that.
And it's a season-by-season tour throughout Ambridge, isn't it? So we start off with all the different seasons into January, and you have what you call misty memories.
Yes, misty memories are written in an old leather-bound sort of diary, really, that Jennifer's had over the years, because Jennifer's always enjoyed writing. And she's writing evocative little things about each month, really, about the outing for the over 60s to Western Supermare. She's writing about what the countryside looked like in with the frothy blossoms in May. She's writing about what it was like to be there at Brookfield on a lovely, warm Christmas, you know, by the log fire. And I want you to feel that you're there.
And you say there, Jennifer, throughout her life, you, Angela Piper, as Jennifer, have been in the show for 46 years. And I wonder, do you sometimes think to yourself, where does Jennifer end and Angela begins, or vice versa?
I don't know. I think as soon as you get in the studio and you pick up your script, that's Jennifer. And I then visualize me as being Jennifer dressed in her cashmere with her, her smart shoes. And that is Jennifer with her pompous, adoring, well, I don't know whether he is adoring, but wealthy husband. And that's Jennifer. And then I come home and I'm me and I'm Angela. And I think never the twain shall meet, basically. Although people do say, well, you know, there are similarities, but I don't know. Certainly not the bank balance.
And the Archers itself, will you be celebrating your 60th anniversary next year? What do you think, roughly 5 million listeners every single week, what do you think is the secret to the Archers' success?
I don't know what the real success is. It is very, very successful. It's gone on longer than any other drama series in the world. I mean, to go on for 60 years is quite amazing. And it obviously has a tremendous sort of magic. And I think it is just that mixture of fact and fantasy that people can draw on, and it satisfies them.
And one of the things that's the beauty of the book, actually, you talk about the fantasy and people imagining things. Every single person will have a different image of how they see the different characters in the Archers, the different houses. And this is one of the things that the book brings together. It allows you to create something, all these different characters, and put it into one book and just bring Ambridge and the Archers alive for everybody.
Yes, I think that's it, with the different sorts of recipes for the different characters, and also little sort of snippets about what Uncle Walter would have said, and little bits of recipes that have been written on a little scrap of paper and dug out of somebody's dresser drawer, or as Jennifer says, in out of your pinafore pockets, slightly scrumpled up, and the scrapbook is laid down on the kitchen table on top of these little snippets. And basically, I just want people to immerse themselves into that, to feel that they can go to the Ambridge Flower and Produce Show, to feel that they can go also to the bonfire on the village green on November the 5th, that they're part of the harvest supper, that they can be in St. Stephen's polishing the pews in the spring, ready for Easter, and that Jill comes by with her armfuls of daffodils. I just feel, because on some of these pages, there is the tablecloth, there are the potatoes, there are the real things and photographs of them. And then also you've got a lovely picture of a mug of tea and that magic in the book, I'm hoping, of once again, fact and fantasy.
Food has always been a major part of the Archers, isn't it? As you just said, we've got the St. Stephen's Summer Fete, we've got the Harvest Supper, all of these things that people can mentally relate to. And as part of that, you then can make up, Jennifer, of course, one of the great reasons why she would be the one to put a book like this together is the fact that she's built a reputation as being such a good cook. So many shooting parties, lunches, dinner parties, all that kind of thing. But within here, you've got your Jennifer's recipes, but also people like Annabelle's contributed the tartella tomate. We've got also Granny Perkins' lemon pudding. We've got lots of characters, past and present, that you know all about and within the book we can read about.
Yes, I think that's the fun. I want people who have been Archers listeners for years and years to be able to look and say, oh, yes, this is the person that I'd forgotten about, and they were in the village years and years and years ago. And, perhaps Nigel Pargeter had a nanny and she made orange seed cake. And then we've heard about Lady Goodman, Sir Sidney Goodman. And suddenly it will trigger off somebody's memory into, yes, we did have that spoken about years ago. And I remember that character. And then there was the Danish help at Bridge Farm called Torkil. And he said, suggested a blackberry butterscotch cream, which is a Danish sort of based on a Danish recipe. And yeah, I just want you to remember old characters and also the present characters and dig into the history, because having gone on for nearly 60 years, there is a tremendous history to peel away the layers and dig deep and remember Walter Gabriel and dear old Granny P and all the old characters that many of you loved.
And one of the things I like in here is that just all along the way, every now and again, we get Jennifer's jottings. And the one that I liked, which I never knew about, was the hint of sprinkling sugar on custard to stop a skin forming. These are just little snippets that Jennifer's picked up along the way.
Oh, she has. Yeah, she's been told about these things from her grannies and her aunts and all the people in the village. And there are all sorts of things we know about, and how Auntie Prue would polish her black range, and how you can sort of crystallize grapes or flowers, and by dipping it in beaten egg white and dusting it with sugar. You know, all these little things that Jennifer knows, and we all know these little bits and bobs, and she's jotted it down in her notebook. And I mean, when she's visited Jill, who's been cooking, Jill would say, I mix together some carrots and some dried apricots, and I boil them together and then puree them, and it makes a lovely smooth sauce to put with a loin of pork, and maybe just a dash of vinegar in it and a little bit of sugar, you know. And those things evolve with cooking, and I think Jennifer must have jotted all these down, or asked all the people in the family and the people in the village, you know, their ideas of their little bits of jottings.
And one thing I like, I have to confess, I am not much of a cook, but when I went through the book, there's one that I like, which is Jennifer's Simple Pasta, very easy to make. And one thing that was really quite topical as well, which is one of these things which I so admire people, they open their cupboard and they think, oh yeah, I have that, and this'll make such and such. And that is the credit crunch pie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we're all going to be aware of not spending too much on cooking these days. And yes, if you look in your pantry, in your larder, in your cupboard, you're going to be able to find the odd onion and some potato, and snip up a bit of bacon, and you know, you've got some plain flour and some butter or some margarine, or you know, Joe Grundy even has lard in his larder, I think, or Clary has, and there you'll be able to, you know, sort of mix together and make a lunch out of it, make a supper out of it. You know, those are simple recipes, and you know, that's the fun of it. There's nothing too difficult in the book. It's going to be easy for anybody to create a recipe from it.
Let's just talk a little bit about you. We're sat in your kitchen. You made me some tea and some delicious homemade shortbread and chocolate biscuits. How do you spend your time away from the Archers and away from cooking?
Away from cooking and away from the Archers. Oh, my goodness. Well, we entertain a horde of grandchildren from time to time. I spend time mopping floors, taking my dear old dog a walk, and, you know, picking vegetables out of the garden prior to using them to cook, and visiting friends and relations. And, well, as you say, going to the Archers, writing my book. Absolutely love doing interior design and collecting lovely bits of old French furniture and making things look very beautiful out there, and enjoying French food and the French countryside. And I don't know. And years ago, as Jennifer is helping her mother and poor Jack, I helped look after my father, who lived to be virtually 100, who lived close by. And I used to bake him his cakes and make him his pies and puddings. And he was the most delightful old man. And, you know, my life is pretty full.
Well, you've told us lots of things there that we didn't know about Angela Piper. Tell us something that we perhaps don't know about the Archers, or perhaps would surprise us, because you, of course, are one of the most longest standing characters within the Archers.
Oh, dear, what a thought. Yeah, I suppose I am. Well, I think the thing that surprises people about the Archers, first of all, let's not go into it in too much detail, but I don't think any of us look exactly like the characters that you've got in your imaginings, that and keep it like that, because I think you'd be disappointed if you actually saw us. I think it's perhaps better you don't. But similarly, when we have studio managers or people there in the studio who are making the sound effects so that it sounds as though you're really there walking through the wood and scrunching through autumn leaves. You're actually shuffling your feet through some old recording tape. Or if you're cooking porridge on the arga, we've actually got an arga there in the studio, not heated, but a cold arga, so you can hear the clunk as the lids go down and the clunk as the doors close. And then you're sort of stirring a pan, you're making porridge for Brian's breakfast. Well, actually, the studio manager is stirring a dirty old dishcloth in a pan with some water in to make it sound sort of slushy and just like porridge going round. Or, you know, we're biting into crunchy toast. Well, we're probably actually eating a biscuit, or it's amazing. Or have a glass, you know, by the pool, have a lovely glass of Pimm's and let's put in an ice cube. And it's a domino that's dropped into a glass that clinks on the side. And then David or Brian or Adam are there in the lambing sheds and a lamb is born. And there is a studio manager with a pot of yogurt making squishy, squelchy noises, sort of through his fingers of the yogurt, which sounds like the baby lamb being born. That's where I think you'd all be astonished, because the sound that comes out is very, very real. But looking at it in the studio, it's often terribly amusing.
And even after all this time, it's quite clear from the animation on your face there telling us that you still have a huge love for the Archers. You've just never tired of it.
No, I still love it. We all get together. We are a family. It's quite extraordinary, and it's completely unique. And we come from all over the country, and we meet up and have met up, some of us, for many, many years. And we know each other terribly well. We know the backgrounds of each other, our children, our grandchildren, our family, and what's going on in our lives. And it's a very, very special program, because we have that depth of understanding of one another, and very much like a family. I mean, some of us get on with each other better than others do. I mean, it's just like a real family, really.
And just back to the book, Jennifer Aldridge's Archer's Cookbook. You've got 60 years worth of material to tap into already. This is the second book. This is the updated edition of it. Plenty more for another one?
Well, I think cooking goes on forever. People are going to always be cooking in their kitchens, and there will always be room for another one. Yeah, indeed, I hope so.
Well, it's the perfect gift for any Archers fan. Angela, thank you very much for inviting us.
Delighted. It's fun. Now you've got to try one of those chocolate biscuits.
I can tell you the biscuits were delicious, especially the shortbread. What was really unusual about being in Angela's kitchen and in her house was I felt that her house had actually been plucked out of Ambridge itself. It really was quite uncanny. You got such a feel of the Archers in there. Of course, Archer's completely fictitious. It's not even like saying something like Emmerdale, where you could go and visit the village. This is purely fictitious. It's all created, as Angela described, in a studio. But on her kitchen wall are a couple of watercolours. And they are pictures of Jennifer Aldridge's kitchen. And they were painted by an artist who hadn't actually been to Angela Piper's house. And I can honestly tell you, the similarity is just uncanny. It's like the woman was in Angela's kitchen. It was just bizarre, really, really strange that somebody should capture it. So it was extremely interesting to go and visit Angela. I have to say, note to editor, more visits outside of the studio, please. Like that's going to happen. Now, if you are an Archers fan or you know someone who is, then now is a great time to buy Jennifer Aldridge's Archers Cookbook by Angela Piper, because it's currently available online with a 25% discount, making it £7.49. What a snip it is. And you can get that at borders.co.uk. I hope you enjoy the cover as well. It's got an old Roberts radio on the front with a blue and white jug with all the kitchen utensils. It really captures the whole thing. Now, since we're about to talk travel with Tom Hall, now seems a good time to tell you about the Borders Travel Photography Competition. To celebrate the publication of Steve Davies' inspirational new book, Travel Photography, we've teamed up with Footprint and our friends at Intrepid Travel and Nikon to give you the chance to win a holiday to Morocco worth £1,600 and a DSLR Nikon camera worth over £1,000. Not bad, eh? Well, you can find all the entry details and the terms and conditions on the homepage of our website, borders.co.uk. But in a nutshell, to be in with a chance of winning the prize, what you need to do is you have to submit a photograph that you've taken into one of the following four main categories: faces that you'll meet, all the great travel icons, landscapes, and adventurous world. Now, once you've decided, you submit the photo that you've taken at borders.co.uk. It's quite easy to fill all the form in.
for you to upload your photograph there. And also, if you're under 18, there's a special category for you. There will be one overall winner from the adult categories eligible for the grand prize, and each category winner will receive a Nikon Coolpix camera. So get online now to read all the details, and you could be off to Morocco with a brand new camera. Good luck with that. And if photography is your thing, then you might like to know that right now at borders.co.uk, you can buy Steve Davies travel photography for half price. Time now then to turn our attention to holidays by rail with Tom Hall, the travel editor at Lonely Planet. Now, Tom, I have to say, when I heard that we were going to be talking about holidays by rail, I did kind of raise my eyebrows a little bit, because it's fair to say a little bit of a stigma to railway holidays.
I think a few years ago, there certainly would have been stigma attached to railway holidays, but now they are very much the in thing. And we've been thinking for a little while, how can I travel just a little bit greener, maybe travel a little bit slower and discover what's on my own doorstep? Now, for all of those things, taking the train is absolutely perfect. Two things have changed in particular. The first is that trains are more comfortable, more punctual and faster than they have been before. And also that rail companies have woken up to the airline pricing model, where by saying that if they give us actually some good value fares and make it easy for us to book, people will come and use them.
So are we talking holidays by rail in the UK and overseas, or just in the UK?
Well, I think we can start with talking about holidays by rail in the UK. And in particular, it's worth drawing people's attention to two services that a lot of travellers may not be aware of, that actually represent both very good value for money and can help you to make the most of your time. And these are sleeper services. Both go to and from London. The first connects London with Scotland, goes to Glasgow, to Edinburgh, and up to Fort William as well. And the second goes out to Cornwall, down to Penzance. So both are overnight trains. And if you take them, you can get some good priced fares on these. And as I said, they can save you an awful lot of time.
So in terms of prices, what would we be looking at? Because I always think automatically, and obviously wrongly, I think holiday by rail, it's going to be quite a lot of money. And also, there's also the question I always feel is that when you get to a destination, how do you then get out and about and explore?
Well, I think the first point to consider is that it's a bit like getting on a plane. If you book early and you're flexible with your dates, you can score some very good fares. The second point is that in some cases, it's not like getting on a plane. You're travelling from city centre to city centre. You can think of it as being a bit like being on a rolling hotel. So you're covering the cost of a night's accommodation. And you can also think of it as being actually quite a fun thing in itself. So whereas going to an airport and travelling around like that, queuing up, going through security, all those kind of concerns can actually be quite stressful. Getting on a train, watching the world go by, having a drink, something to eat, meeting other people. It's actually a very pleasant way to travel in some ways. Harks back to the golden age of travel. I think that's another reason why getting on a train is quite a popular thing to do.
So once we've worked out where we want to go on our railway journey, how's the best way to get the best deal we possibly can in terms of cost?
The golden rule when we're talking about booking trains and getting good deals is book early. And by early, I mean 120 days in advance for the UK, 90 days in advance for services to Western Europe, Germany, France, Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, and 60 days in advance if you're going into Eastern Europe. Though for a lot of the cases in Eastern Europe, you don't actually need to book in advance because there's nothing to be gained by doing so. But if you can get online when the fares are first available, that's when you're going to get these advance purchase tickets. Now, in the UK, the ticket purchasing process has been made a lot simpler, so you're no longer presented with 10 or 12 different types of ticket that can be quite confusing. Should be 5 different types of ticket, and when you've actually gone onto that page, you should see them first class, second class, one way and return. So it should be much more laid out in a much more straightforward fashion. For booking tickets on the continent, the other thing to remember is you can go and book directly via the French Railways website, the Italian Railways website, etc., and pick up the tickets when you're there. So remember, when you travel, to take with you the credit card that you book with.
So is that the best way to do it, if you're thinking? Because obviously when we think about regular holidays, we either assume, right, well, we'll go into the travel agents or we'll go onto the internet. But with railway holidays, that would perhaps be the best way, to go direct rather than the travel agent?
It certainly is the best thing to do, is to go direct rather than use a travel agent. And the reason for that is that travel agencies specialising in rail holidays are used to putting together quite complicated itineraries. So what they will do is offer you maybe a 10-day trip through Europe with 3 or 4 train rides and hotels thrown in. So some quite complex packages. If we're just talking about going somewhere for the weekend, maybe dipping your toe into the world of travel by rail in Europe, it's perfectly feasible to do it yourself. Companies like Rail Europe can book you a point-to-point ticket, but I think if you have a look around, it's very, very easy to do it yourself. The other company that's very good for this is German Railways, or Deutsche Bahn as they're known, and they're excellent for journeys that involve travel to and from Germany.
In the UK, we're quite bad, or we've got a bad reputation for our train services not really being that great in terms of service, punctuality, all of that kind of thing. Whereas on the continent, they do it totally different. It's a different experience to have rail travel in the UK and in Europe. Would that be fair to say?
I think the UK is catching up in some ways when it comes to punctuality, though obviously train services are only as good as your last one. If you have a terrible one, then you know it does skew your opinion. Particularly regular rail passengers may well disagree with that. However, I should say figures do bear out that train services are slowly getting more punctual. Punctuality is simply something that happens in a lot of countries in Europe when you get on a train, Switzerland being a great example. Quite often there might be 2 minutes between connections and you'll make the connections. They will be there. The train just will arrive on time. I recently took a train from Montpellier in the south of France to Paris. It left 15 minutes late and it arrived on time. So that's an example of the sort of standard of service that we're talking about. However, of course, there are exceptions to the rule. I took a sleeper train last year from Brussels to Cologne. It was 4.5 hours late and I missed all my connections. So just a caution, that can sometimes happen. In the majority of cases, it's not like that.
Now, I have to say, the last time I took a long train journey was, I think, from London, Euston to Glasgow. And I do love the West Coast journey, I have to say. I have quite a few friends who've gone then on and done sort of the West Highland line and way up north. Let's talk a bit about favourite and popular destinations by rail.
You've just mentioned one of the ones that is rightly heralded. Pretty much any train that goes north or west from Glasgow is going to pass through some absolutely spectacular, stunning scenery. The West Highland Line being a great example. You can take a train across Rannoch Moor in a storm, and it's just quite simply one of the best things that you can do in Britain, never mind whether you're on a train or not. It's absolutely splendid. The UK actually does quite well for scenic rail journeys, and I think you will often find yourself passing through some very pleasant countryside. I'm thinking, gosh, I must make a note to stop here. But in particular, lines that radiate north and west through Scotland really are quite something. And if you can tie them up with a ferry journey at the end of it, well, then that's a real treat. Though I think most people, when they think about taking a rail holiday, will be talking about going to the continent. Obviously, Paris and Brussels are the easiest places to reach by Eurostar, but there are other ones that are very, very much within reach. There's a new high-speed line opening from Brussels to Amsterdam, which is going to knock something in the region of 90 minutes off that journey time, meaning that you'll be able to get from London to Amsterdam by rail in around about 4 hours, which is a pretty good, fast route. If you want to take it a bit more slowly, I'd suggest that when you go to Brussels, you take a train to Antwerp. Antwerp is a very underrated city, but it's got a growing reputation for fashion. It's always been a place to go to buy jewellery, but the shopping is excellent. But it has a wonderful nightlife, great youthful feel. Another superb destination that's only a few hours' journey from the UK is Cologne in Germany. Cologne is somewhere best known for its cathedral, but it's also a very beautiful city away from that. Just a great place to go for the weekend. If you can go in late November or December, it has a very noted Christmas market. And this is somewhere you can go and pick up lots of curios and knickknacks. Good Christmas present shopping, especially for things like handmade toys. So that's something to have a think about. And certainly going by train, it's not going to be overly crowded, whereas the roads going into Cologne do get very busy at that time of year, though wrap up warm if you do go. One other place that is a very underrated destination is Strasbourg. Strasbourg is in the north and east of France, mentally checking my geography there. And it's somewhere that's been linked by a new TGV fast train route from Paris, Gare de l'Est, which means that it's only a couple of hours from the French capital. So you could see both if you wanted to. Strasbourg has a very lovely medieval centre. It's very much undervisited as a tourist destination. The European Parliament comes here a few times every year, so that brings lots of investment, some very good restaurants there. And generally, it's a fascinating place historically. It's been quarreled over between France and Germany for centuries. And this means it's got a real international feeling to it. So Strasbourg, very good place. I can't get away without mentioning Paris. We have to talk about Paris. It's somewhere that's still probably the cheapest place to get to by rail, £59 return from London, and not much more from lots of other cities with connecting services now. And quite simply, we are so fortunate to have Paris on our doorstep that it's so near for us. It's somewhere that you shouldn't just go to once. You should go at least once a year, if not more so. It's just quite rightly the most popular place to visit in the whole world. And when you go, choose a different neighbourhood each time, a different arrondissement. Have a good look around and you will discover new things and just come back refreshed and ready to go again.
I have to admit that you speak about Cologne and the Christmas markets. I do love a Christmas market. The last time I went to one on the continent was in Brussels, and I very much enjoyed that. So that would whet my appetite. As a final point, for going on train holidays, what Lonely Planet book would you suggest our Borders listeners to pick up?
I think depending on the destination, if there's an encounters guide, which covers the city that you're going to, as a small format city guide with a tear out map, that's probably a good place to start. Though if you're going to do what quite a lot of people do and get a rail pass covering a whole country or even more so, there's country guides and continent guides, which can really make sure that you've got quite a lot of information at your disposal.
Brilliant. Thank you, Tom. I think you've given us a different outlook on holidays by rail.
Thank you.
And all the books Tom mentioned there are available online at the Lonely Planet web store. That's borders.co.uk/Lonely Planet, where you'll also be able to read Tom's travel blog. And just before I go, let's talk vampires. Vampire fiction is hugely fashionable these days. Remember, we spoke to Laurel K. Hamilton on the podcast not that long ago. It's all thanks mostly to the popularity of Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series. Now, if you're looking for something different, a little bit of a different slant on the vampires, then why not try the House of Night novels by the mother and daughter writing team of PC Cast and Kristen Cast. Now, the books centre around the theme of a vampire finishing school and take place in an alternate universe inhabited by both humans and vampires. Vampires spelt with a Y. PC Cast says that she decided to spell vampires differently because she likes the way it looks. I have to say, it is different. And the protagonist, who is 16-year-old Zoe Redbird, is marked as a fledgling and moves to the House of Night School to undergo her transformation. There are 5 books so far, Marked, Betrayed, Chosen, Untamed and Hunted, and they're all available to buy now with a 30% discount at borders.co.uk, as well as the next book in the series, which is called Tempted, and it's out on October the 27th and can be pre-ordered now. Well, that brings us to the end of this Borders podcast, and I do hope you enjoyed it. Remember to check back at the beginning of September at borders.co.uk for the next podcast, which will include a chat with Andy Stanton, the author of the Mr. Gum books. And remember, if you've missed any of the previous pods or you just want to hear them again, then you can check them out at borders.co.uk/podcast. I'm Susan Spence, and on behalf of all the team at Borders, thanks for listening.